Welcome, one and all, to Professional Conversationalist, the podcast. The space where we explore the wonder, humour and craziness in conversations and situations in that rarefied atmosphere we call the workplace. The podcast that helps you make sense of working with other humans, including you. The podcast that helps you make sense of work.
I love hearing the intro. Just every single time, I love hearing the intro. The podcast that helps you make sense, and us, helps us to make sense of work. All right, Chris. So, Chris and Iyari here. Chris, what are we talking about this time?
Well, this time we're talking about the power of power.
The power of power.
The power of power.
The power of power.
Now, I can hear our listeners, if there are any, asking, what does that mean?
I can hear their brains ticking because they know what it means. Power in the workplace. Boy, how does that affect conversations?
Yeah.
Talk to me. Yeah, that has a huge impact, because you've got times where because there is this thing called power. If you didn't know, so the other day I've been working with somebody on a program, and I worked with her on, it was her first week, and I was running a program with vice president of the company in as part of the group, and we were doing all sorts of stuff together, and people were revealing their inner selves and things that they do. And she did the same. She chose to really engage, which is great. I now caught up with her several months later, and she said to me, had I known who was in the room. One of the reasons why the session even worked for her at all, she loved the fact that she could feel free, she could share what she shared, and the other people seemed to do the same. She didn't know them that well, so it was all good. She didn't know some of them at all. She said now, later she found out that those were VPs and very senior people. She said, had she known...
She would never have shared what she shared. But it's too late now.
Too late.
The cat's out of the bag.
But the benefit was, she now knows that she can. And she knows that it's not life-changing. It's not disastrous if you are yourself with senior people in the room. But not everybody knows that, because just having some seniority... If it was down the pub and that stranger walked in, you wouldn't give a fig. You'd go, listen, what are you drinking? I'm about to go get around. What are you having? And it would be very simple. And you wouldn't even, maybe even have gone to them first. You might have gone to your mates and then said, listen, are you going to stick around? What are you having? At the end, as you go to the bar. But if you know that they're the VP, you... Some people might go to them first and say, Mr. VP, would you like a drink? Get a drink. We'll get a drink for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Power in organisation.
Oh.
And why I thought this would be an interesting topic to discuss in our podcast is because it's largely invisible in organisations.
Yeah.
And yet it plays such an important and powerful role as to how organisations operate, to how they're set up.
Yeah.
And the actual dynamics that happen in organisations. Often, we talk about the system or the organisation having a life of its own, and sometimes people think they're in control,
yeah,
but often the organisation is controlling them. And I think a key part of that, and a large part of that, is how power plays a part in the organization, then that shapes the lives of the people working within the organizations. And to me, that's really fascinating, because it stops people doing things, it stops people from talking about things, it makes other people do things. I mean, power is huge, isn't it?
It is. The bit about making people do things, it was interesting watching Liz Truss when she went to see the King. And she was stood at the door.
For our American viewers, Liz Truss was our prime minister, who is no longer our prime minister.
She had 44 days.
44 days.
44 days.
Shortest reign ever.
A month and a bit. A month and a bit.
Can you imagine her at a tea party saying, oh, hey, I was Prime Minister for 44 days.
44 days. Yeah, good luck.
Really? Tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. And in those 44 days, she managed to wreck the economy completely. Hence, it only lasted 44 days. But, I mean, that's a record as well. The amount of damage you... Don't underestimate the damage you can do in 44 days.
Talk about having an impact, eh?
Oh, yeah, talk about having an impact and power. She's supposed to be at the top of the tree, right? But it was really interesting to see her at the door as she's entering the room to greet the king. She recognizes that there is a power dynamic there that is, you know, that his power is significantly greater than hers. Now, they're both just human beings, right? You know, if you strip them naked, they're just human beings. That's all they are. But this power that's invisible, but it's not really invisible because look at the room she's in. Look at the building she's in. Look at the person standing in front of her that isn't letting her approach and speak to this other human. He's not a human. He's the king. And there's all this stuff to do with power. So she stood there at the door and she looks like she's about four. And she's going, do I genuflect? Do I curtsy? When do I curtsy? Do I go? And she's holding herself as if she's on the starting blocks of the 100 meters. And she genuinely has no clue what to do with her body. Does she step forward? Which leg does she step forward with? Where does her head go? And she's like, do I bow? Do I curtsy? Which do I do? The level of confusion on this woman is amazing. And in that moment, she is the prime minister. There is no higher office than hers. And yet she has the power dynamic in that room, in that moment, is just a mess. It's having such an impact. And if you asked her, how did she feel about that? Or does power have any impact on her? She might even say, no, that it doesn't have any. And then you would show her the tape and go, can we talk again? And she'd go, well.
Yeah. And I don't think that's so far from what happens in organisations, in the corporate world, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And instead of the palace, there is the size of the office, the corner office with its trimmings, with its luxury. And you enter those kind of environments. And you're right, it's not invisible in one sense.
Yeah.
But it's invisible to your mind consciously in another sense.
Yes.
And yet your body knows it's there.
Oh my goodness.
So it doesn't quite know how to react. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're right, though, because we absorb structures not just into our mind, but into our body, into our neurology.
Into our neurology, that's right.
Because we have a sense of what we should do. In Nigeria, for example, depending on the tribe you're in, some tribes do this more definitively and with more energy than others. But in where I'm from, if you meet somebody that's older than you, you have to go down on a knee in order to speak to them.
Oh, wow.
The first time of meeting them in a day. And when you see your parents for the first time that day, could be in the morning, could be in the evening, you have to bend the knee. Before you say anything else, before you do anything else, you must greet them. And that greeting is not hi. Hi is not a greeting. The greeting is you say a word or some word like in my language is lagemwa, and then you have to go down. You have to at least make a motion. I never saw, because my dad is of course the top of the tree in terms of my life and what I'd seen of my family till I went to Nigeria. And then for the first time, I saw my dad have to greet somebody. And he had to do what I have to do with him. And it was a revelation. It wasn't just me doing it. It was my dad also had to do it. He had to greet and say lagemwa to his mom and bend his knee. And I thought, goodness, this is real. Wow.
Ooh. Wow, you know what? I'm liking this ritual, because I'm a few years older than you, Yare, right? I think this ritual would not go amiss when we work together. The bending of the knee sounds very beneficial.
Yeah. And
I think that would make it. That would set the scene, wouldn't it?
I would encourage you to keep dreaming those dreams, because there's nothing wrong with fantasy. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a thing, and I think people should indulge in it. And it seems you're indulging in it right now. Good for you. And you should continue to do that.
You really know how to crush a dream, don't you? You really know. Here I am, telling you my hopes, dreams, and desires. I was taught we should be encouraging these things, but no. Instead, there is a put down. Thank you very much indeed.
No,
that's very kind of you.
Please have the dreams. There's nothing wrong with them. They will continue to be in your mind, expressed in your unconscious state. And just continue to do that. It's fine. Cherish them.
So, with organizations,
yeah.
I've been reading this book, well, a few years ago, actually, but I was just reviewing it recently.
Yeah.
And it's a book called Impro by a guy called Keith Johnston.
Uh-huh.
And he's a guy who works in the field in improv theatre, in developing people, in creativity, actors,
yeah.
in these areas.
Yeah.
And he had a really interesting take on status interactions. And
okay.
Of course, power is about, largely about status and how we view who other people are to us.
Yeah.
And the positions within that gathering, if you like, or where we stand, you know, in terms of the power that we hold.
Because we created that hierarchical map in order to know where we are. We try and find the map, then place ourselves in some portion of it. Some people just decide, whatever the map is, I'm at the top. That's the only way they think. But some people decide, wherever I am, I'm at the bottom. But then some people, the majority of us, try and figure out what the map is and where we might be according to other people. And that's a biggie, isn't it? It's a biggie.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that we are forever playing, always, we are always playing status games, whether we like it or not, unconsciously. So we play high status, we play low status, we both strive for high status. Sometimes we both strive for low status, and sometimes as you go high, I go low.
Yeah.
And sometimes as you go low, I might be invited to go high. And all this is just part of our hardwiring. We are hardwired to do this because we need to know where we are in our position. And it's back to our herd instinct, if you like, and survival within herd instincts. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I agree. Man opens door for woman in the office. Why does he open door? Well, he says, I should. Why does he think he should? Well, he thinks, actually, that because of the power that he is part of wielding, that he should be magnanimous and offer that. Woman walks through door, turns back and says to man, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
I don't subscribe to the power structure that you that you might think you are. You are a condescending.
That's right.
That you are contravening in order to open the door for me. I feel like your door opening is condescension. And he's struck with surprise. I was only trying to open the door for you.
I was just trying to be polite. I was just trying to be polite. It just occurred to me, is what I was taught. Egg in your face, brother. Egg in your face.
Attempts to navigate the power structures. And what's really interesting is he might not even think that actually he's navigating some power structure. He might think, I'm just trying to be nice. And genuinely not understand that actually his supposed niceness comes from a structure that he's either agreeing to or supporting or somehow solidifying. He may not have the intention of doing any of those things, but there's that power. It's so insidious. It's playing its game. Almost whether you like it or not, there's power. There's a power play at play. Is that a fair assessment, Chris? What do you think?
I think so. And it's very powerful. I mean, I think I've worked in a lot of organizations, and a classic example for me is sometimes you get someone who is promoted from their peers, and now they are the manager of their peers. The week before, it was like, hey, guys, how you doing?
Mates.
And then the next week, it's the tones change.
It's not mates
anymore. The body language changes. And they are desperately still trying to be mates with their people who were their peers, if I can even say that, who in the organization. But the whole thing has changed, and power has a way of seducing us. I think also in terms of even with parents and their children, I mean, I sometimes recognize the tones in my voice or my attitude towards my children. And they are parent-child tones and the power structures that sit there. But my children are 24 and 20 right now. They're adults. They're no longer kids. But the forces of power, it's so seductive, and it takes you over without you really knowing. And so in organizations, I think that often people don't recognize that they are displaying signals and symbols of power, and they don't recognize the impact that this is having on conversational dynamics within the workplace.
Well, you and I have said this on more than one occasion, and it's come up quite recently as well, that those in power recognize the impact of power the least, or they regularly miss the impact of power, they underestimate its impact.
Yes.
And those with the least amount of power overestimate the impact of that power. They are both being impacted by the power structure just differently, and it does have an impact on effectiveness. And in organizations, it's a toughie, actually.
So to you, Yare, what are you talking about? What might be some of these impacts for our listeners?
So I really think in some of the organizations that I've worked in, you get comments about senior leaders as if they aren't human. So I think about how we talk about ministers of government. We talk about ministers of government as if they aren't really human. And it's not difficult to talk about senior people in an organization as if they aren't really human, or as if they are utterly malevolent. So either completely evil or completely good. Whereas they're not completely anything. They're just trying, and today...
Right. And so there's a binary distinction that's kind of put on them.
Yes.
Because of these forces, these power forces, you know, behind the scenes.
Exactly. And
driving your thinking.
Driving your thinking. And it also affects senior people, because in talking with senior people, a lot of the time, so many times I've come across a situation where they speak about the people that work in their organization in only a few fairly homogeneous groups. So the way they group people as if the groups they're grouping them into are homogeneous, and that even if they have some similar characteristics, that those characteristics apply to them in a very similar way or have very similar impact. And some of that has some validity. And even some of the crass assessment of the leaders from the position of those who are deep on the shop floor of the organization can have some validity. It probably wouldn't survive if it didn't have any validity, if it wasn't somehow anchored in some scintilla of truth. But it's very rarely the whole story.
And yes.
It is quite regular, at least in my experience, and maybe my experience is rarefied, but it's quite regular that a conversation about power and the way the power dynamic is working causes them to reassess their perspective on other groups within the organization. Just revealing it, just getting them to look at it, it brings power into sharper relief. And what then happens is it's as if scales fall from their eyes, or as if they suddenly see that little bit clearer, and they then talk about decisions they're making, etc. In the context of power, they can have a better appreciation of what's in front of them. Whereas if power is left to be insidious and invisible, then it can have an impact, and they won't know that it's having that impact. I mean, what is that? Does that connect with what you?
That's right, and I think that features in a major part of the work that we do, is helping people become aware of these power dynamics and that they are a very real force that needs to be taken into account in the interactions with their colleagues around the organization. I think to add to what you were saying, another thing I notice is that when you have someone in power, often they discount the skills, capabilities, and resources of people who are below them in power, as if their official status as someone higher up in the organization suddenly makes a difference to their own capabilities and lowers the capabilities of others who are underneath them. I've often seen leaders who are less skilled than the people that they lead or manage, but not recognize the capabilities and the skills of the higher skilled person who is underneath them in the organization. And, you know, so that almost like a deletion of resource, I think, is a very harmful one to organizations. They don't sometimes take on board the advice or the thinking of those below them in the organization, as if those in the organization weren't able to process information in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
So I noticed that. And also, in terms of the feedback, we talk a lot about feedback.
Yes.
In our work.
Yes.
And when these power dynamics are at play, it really distorts information, conversations in a huge way, where people don't feel open. And so if you don't recognize the power dynamics in organizations very often, and if you don't recognize them and mitigate them in some way, then what happens is the information that is fed back upwards is very often distorted in lots of ways. So the quality, the accuracy of the information that if you had, you could do something with, but it's not there. And so you're not able to do stuff about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to me whenever, and this has been the case with everything we've been doing, whenever you're able to play back or get them to play back what's going on with power in this room, and then what's going on with power with you and your colleagues? What's going on with power with regard to power and the people you manage, people that report into you? What's going on with power in terms of you and the organization? Whenever you're able to reveal those things or able to get them to reveal them, their perception changes, then absolutely the dynamic changes. Because observation actually has an impact. So they get to see it and they go, oh my gosh. And that oh my gosh is fabulous. It's fabulous. That moment of, because you and I we've had this experience exactly, where a very senior person has no idea, genuinely has no idea, that the power they hold has an impact on the decision making of the people, of a person around them. They've been around them so long that they think, oh, that person isn't affected by my power at all, and I don't really have power over them. No, not at all. You do have power over them, and that power has an impact, and it makes them talk to you or not talk to you in these contexts. And to watch their eyes when they say no, but I don't think that, you know what, you might be right. And then they say, well, I don't know if I'm right. Why don't you play it back? See if it's true. Are there any situations that play that way? Is this a conversation you feel you could have with them? Then they go, I don't know if I could have this. I think I should be able to, but I don't know if I could now. Then they have it, and then it comes out. And you think, wow, okay. and it's revealed. And I love it because you said it earlier, power is invisible so much of the time. And I think it's not just invisible, but insidious. But revealing it, it's because none of those things make power bad. What's really difficult is when it's invisible. So yes, when it's revealed and we can do something with it, we can play with it, wow. Those are moments I love. I'm in love with those moments. Because people just, they get so much from it. They don't have to either pretend not to have it or to pretend it doesn't mean anything. Because when you're subordinate to somebody, you are subordinate to them. They do have some power over your role in an organization. That's a real thing. We don't have to fight it. We don't have to pretend that it's not there. We can just live with it. But we don't have to be a slave to it. But we can incorporate it into our thinking. And just,
that's right. And it's all the other stuff, isn't it? It's the stuff that's hidden below the surface that people, when they gain awareness of this, it's almost like their faces light up. When we talk about these things in some of the work we do with people, with groups, and we talk about this stuff, it's almost like they nod their heads, they smile, they laugh, and they go, oh, yes, this is what's happening beneath the surface.
Indeed.
Because they haven't yet had those realizations.
Yeah.
And when they do, it's almost like a new world has opened up that actually these status games are being played out in organizations the whole time long, whether we like it or not. And as you said, power is really real. We don't have to ignore the fact that power exists. And it's very useful. There's a reason why hierarchies are put in place in organizations.
Yes.
Sometimes it just makes an organization more efficient and more effective. But often there are other forces at play that actually power in some ways counteracts the intention of putting the power there in the first place, and it actually slows things up or distorts things in ways that leaders and organisations wouldn't want to happen. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think of the NHS. A long time ago, you didn't have managers in the NHS, you just had clinicians.
Uh-huh.
But clinicians would be faced with decisions that were to do with managing health delivery. And then some bright spark said, let's take those decisions away, freeing up clinicians to make exclusively clinical decisions. So now you have another group of people who make what could be described as administrative decisions, and then you have a group of people that make clinical decisions. So then you feel like, oh, well, actually, there's a bit more. This administrative decision thing, given how many people we have, this is quite a big thing. So you hire some more of them. Now you're using a significant amount of resource on non-clinical decisions, still leaving the clinical decisions to the clinicians. But you've got now a whole army of people, of managers.
Yeah.
And then somebody's going to say, how much power do they have? Because over time, they've got the power to hire and fire. Because those decisions are now administrative. So they might even have power over the people who are making clinical decisions. In fact, from one perspective, their decisions that we call administrative might be the decisions that allow the healthcare organization to work or not work. And so suddenly you've moved not just the decision-making, you've actually created a power structure. You've created a power structure and it's running wild and having an impact in lots of ways. And because we haven't thought about what does that, we now might have to navigate it. And you might go, well, we're going to fire half of them. Yeah, there was a reason why.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you hired all of them. So just arbitrarily firing half of them, I'm wondering how far that's going to get you. Because there's no thinking about what's the power that has gone in here, what's happened. And it's easy to look at that without looking at what the power dynamics are. Because they build up over time, don't they? But
yes.
This is what insidious power. This is how it can be built and what it can do. Or other organizations, it doesn't have to be health. Other organizations can have exactly the same things happen to them.
That's right. And I also make the distinction between power that is endorsed upon groups of individuals, the hierarchical power, if you like, or the organizational, the official power.
Yeah.
But then when it's combined with personality power, so yikes. I make the distinction between, you know, because some people, even though they don't have the official titles or the official power, they still hold an enormous amount of power. And you see sometimes leaders working their way around these individuals because they know the power they have, whether it's because of their personalities or whether it's because the networks that they can influence.
Yes.
Even though they don't hold the official title. But when you get individuals who have that organizational power in their titles, as well as personality power, because they're force of personality. Because there are some individuals, right? We know they are more powerful than us, or in our minds, we think they're more powerful than us because of their presence. Maybe it's their height sometimes. Yes. Maybe it's the way they're dressed.
Yes.
Or maybe it's the way they converse, or they're wittier than you.
Yes.
They're stronger than you in some way, shape, or form.
Or and like they, you said, who endorses them might be the reason that they have power.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Do you know what?
And so when it's it's when these forces combine, right?
Yeah.
That's when you get. I think real issues and distortions of conversations.
Well, I'm immediately thinking of who's that guy that was Boris's right hand man that took that drive.
Dominic Cummings.
If you met him on the tube, you would not say there's a guy with a whole lot of charisma. You might not say, here's a guy who makes me think I've got to do what he says. But if the PM has decided what Dominic Cummings says is what goes, you might then be thinking, but even though I'm a minister, even though I have a constituency, I now have to do what Dominic says, so you're in a party and Dominic's there and you have a sense that he's watching. It affects you. It's going to affect you and what you do. Then when you listen to him and he talks about them, and the way he talks about them, everything they were scared of was right.
Yeah.
He was watching and he was going to ditch on them, and he did. And you know, he called them all manner of names and things. But just imagine in the moments when there was something that needed doing, and some were scared to talk, or some were scared to mention something, or there's either a reticence or a forwardness. Maybe I'll say something to impress Mr. Cummings, and that will put me in a good space with the boss man. And all of that endorsement power that you talked about just now, and again, it just goes back to that power being insidious, isn't it?
So Yare, what would you look out for? So if listeners to our podcast were to ask, oh, well, how might this practically help us? What might you look out for in terms of the things to pick up on that gives you an indication that there are some invisible powers at work?
Yeah, you know, that's a powerful question. Really, because you have to ask, well, how is this affecting me? Is it affecting me? So you'd probably be asking questions like, where do I perceive power to be? And what do I perceive its impact on me to be? If somebody has power, what does that mean? And what does it mean practically? Not what does it mean I could take anybody on? Because when you're sitting on your own... When you're sitting on your own in your office, sitting in your chair, you might feel like you could take anybody on, and then you get into a meeting and say nothing, or meeting when you know something is going on. But to look back and then say, how has that affected me over X amount of time?
Yeah.
What do I perceive it to be? Draw the unconscious into the conscious. How do I describe the power dynamics around me? And really just draw it out, either by a picture or a mind map or some word cloud, or just, you know, those things of throwing ideas out. So you just get a picture of it and then look back and say, how has this affected me? How am I
right? So it's a way of drawing more awareness to these power dynamics, these invisible power dynamics, is by specifically proactively asking yourself questions. That's what I'm hearing. Is that what you're saying?
I think so, Chris. I think so. Because questions, especially ones where you ask yourself and you don't let yourself off the hook for providing an answer, they're quite good. And then you can then give yourself the task of really revealing what's going on. You can ask questions and the subsequent ones. So how does it affect me? When does it affect me? What do I do almost exclusively because of power? Do I ever compensate because of power? Is there any power that I'm ignoring? Do other people have a perspective on power that I think is nonsense? Are there any upstarts who think they have power and I remind them that they have none over me? And it doesn't matter where you start, but so long as you start to build the picture of how power and you are interacting, you can begin to see what that's doing to you. It may be helping you, and it also may be having an impact that you didn't anticipate.
Yes. And I would add to that, I mean, I think little things like, for instance, the tones, picking up on people's tones, because tones are largely outside of consciousness.
They're so revealing.
The difference, I mean, you can immediately tell via the tones who has the power. So the difference between if I perceived you as someone who didn't have as much power as me, or you were reporting to me in some level in the organization, I might say to you, can you put the report on my desk? Can you put the report on my desk, please?
Yeah.
Whereas if I was perceiving you as someone who was my equal or even my superior, the tones would be completely different. It'd be like, would you mind if it's possible getting the report to me in some way, shape or form, or something like that? Yeah. The difference is very visible, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very obvious. So little things like that, just recognizing almost like the status interactions that are happening in virtually every conversation, because sometimes you find yourself playing low status or high status or equal status. And the more aware you are of the status games you are playing in every interaction will let you know or give you an indication of some of the power dynamics that are occurring in that present moment.
Yeah.
And also things like you want to ask a question, but you find yourself not being able to ask it.
Yeah.
Or determining that there is some risk involved in asking it because there's something inside your body that kind of goes, ooh, should I be really asking this?
Yeah.
That, again, is another indication of some of the power dynamics are at play.
Yeah. And this is before you even choose to do anything about it. Just recognizing that it's there. I like that. And I really like the idea. And I think this is quite important to do when trying to do any of this analysis, to separate the doing from the analysis. Because just because you know that there's power or know that you respond to power in a particular way doesn't decide what you should then do. You have to mull over that. You have to chew that a little bit and see, well, what does that mean? Because it has a meaning. And then you can respond to the meaning, of course. But the action itself, there's more to it. There's a bit of meaning there before you decide on what reaction you need to have to that. And that can sometimes be a challenge for people to really sit in it and think, well, what does this mean? Because they really want to be doing, and they're paid to do, so it can be a real challenge. I mean, you've seen it. Is that your experience too, Chris? That people want to get to doing, to responding, whereas actually they might benefit from just absorbing the fact that they do take on power quite a bit. Either that they absorb it and they take on positions of power quite easily, or they find that they have avoided taking on any power for X number of years.
Yes. I think the first step is always awareness, isn't it? In any kind of development, awareness is so key in all these areas.
Yeah.
And so I completely agree with you there, Yara, is that that awareness piece is so vital, and before they do anything about it, because sometimes people jump to, I'm going to do something about it. But unless they really recognize what are the forces underneath driving this stuff, it's very hard to do something appropriate about it. You might do something that actually works against you.
Yeah.
And sometimes people listen to these, what I might call kind of trite cliches about, you know, you've got to feel confident or put yourself in a confident kind of position or be confident or say a powerful mantra and get present in the room. And these things can be helpful and useful. But I think sometimes an awareness of what's really happening underneath, when you don't recognize what's actually happening, it can hold you captive, right?
Yeah, I think, and that's the word. Simply understanding that something exists doesn't mean you're free of it.
No.
And your actions are still within it until you say, actually, now I'm going to act outside of it because I understand that. That's that bit about that revealing, making sure there's an understanding or an awareness. And then chewing on that first. What does that mean? I'm aware. What does that mean? And then saying, okay, here's what might be, here are my options for doing. And that doesn't come naturally for everybody. And it's not always very convenient. You might find out that there's a problem with the power dynamic. As a CEO, you might find that there's some problems in the power dynamic or perceptions of the power dynamic in your group. But you're at the point where you've got to make some big decisions and you think, well, can I deal with this while we make decisions? I don't know. It becomes yet another thing. And so there isn't a perfect time for this, but I tell you the truth, that awareness piece and really coming to terms with it, good for any time. Honestly, in my experience, I just think it's always a thing to try and nail. You'll do better decision making afterwards.
I'm sure we can talk about this for much longer. I know the amount of conversations we have about this stuff is staggering. But we've run out of time. So thank you for listening to the Professional Conversationalist podcast, The Thrills, Skills and Spills of the Workplace. See you later.